This is part 20 of For Your Discomfort. For Your Discomfort is a series of much-needed conversations that you can tune into live on Fridays at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time via Zoom. Now, these conversations are designed to elevate the voices of those that have routinely been unheard and underrepresented. Now, I did not set out to turn this into a podcast, but due to popular demand and our growing audience and the fact that I got you, I decided to provide the recordings of the audio. For all updates, please follow at For Your Discomfort on Instagram. And to sign up for the next conversation, go to foryourdiscomfort.com. But in the meantime, white people, step into the room.
Welcome to part 20. I'm excited that this is part 20. We've had 20 parts in less than 2 months, which is incredible because the conversations are much needed. And before I go any further, white people, what's up? Step into the room. Thanks for being here. My name is Bryce, full name Bryce Michael Wood. I say my full name simply to let you know and remind you that my initials are BMW and I'm proud of it. I am joined by two incredible human beings and guests, and they're about to bless us. But before we go any further into the conversation, I always like to start with a moment of silence for all of the life that has not been lost, but the life that has been taken, lives that have gone too soon. So if we could just have a moment of silence for those Black lives. Thank you. Thank you for taking that moment of silence. I always want to start that way because I always want to remember why I started these conversations. I want to remember the root of why these conversations must continue. And it's because of, you know, the lack of...
It grounds it. Definitely grounds it, that's for sure.
It definitely grounds it and reminds us of why it's important that we're having these conversations. For Your Discomfort is education through observation of conversation. I say that in the beginning simply to let you know that this is not a Q&A, okay? This is the part where you just kind of sit and listen to people talking about experiences and their perspectives. We are not here to educate anyone. It is not our job to educate anyone. That said, the conversation itself will be educational, so please listen up. And last but not least, the Black people that you see in front of you do not speak for all Black people, do not represent all Black people. They represent their own experiences and their unique perspectives in the life that they've been walking in. So I just want to get that out of the way. So don't hear something I say, Marcus says, Shanice says, and then be like, well, Marcus said it, so that has to be true for my friend Tyler down the street. Like, no, talk to Tyler before you just go ahead and move on certain things that you've heard in today's conversation. Yeah. And if you saw that my face was on it, yes, I'm a part of the conversation today. I'm not just moderating. I actually have topics that I want to talk about because it's part 20 and that's a big deal. So I said some things in part one, waited 20 episodes and I'm going to talk again today, but let's get into it. I'd like to actually have people introduce themselves. Marcus, if you wouldn't mind telling the people who you are, what you do, let them know who you are. Yeah. Say what's up.
All right. My name is Marcus Wilson. I'm one of the co-founders of Noble. Noble is a footwear and apparel brand in the training space, launched in 2015. A little bit about my background. Grew up in Oklahoma City. Went to undergrad at Cornell. Was in the power industry for a while, building a power plant. Lived in Ghana for a couple of years. Came back, went to MIT for grad school, and then was at Reebok, where I met my current business partner, Michael Schaefer. He and I worked together very closely at Reebok. And then after I left to help someone start a venture capital firm, Michael and I would get together talking about what it would be like to start something and finally realize that if we didn't try it, we would regret it. So we launched the marketing and design agency with the idea of launching our own brands. Noble is the second brand that we launched, took on a life of its own, shut everything else down, and it's been all Noble all the time since 2015.
That's incredible. And Shouts out to you for being on the call and joining the conversation. I was trying to get in touch with Marcus for a while. And it finally was able to happen. Like, your partner was like, you should talk to Marcus. Here's his email. I was like, great. Yeah. And then I emailed him, heard nothing, gave up on it. And then somebody else that works with him was like, no, I'll talk to him, because getting to him via email is not the way.
Yeah, that is not the way. That's for sure.
But we spoke about a month ago, and I'm really happy to have you here.
It was really great connecting and finally talking with you about kind of everything that's been going on. Because it's like not just on the business side, it's also on the personal side. So yeah. I'm married. I have two daughters, 11 and 15. And, there's lots of conversations that happen on the personal front these days as well.
I'm glad we were able to talk too. Yeah. This next person I've known for quite some time as well. She's a very close friend of mine. Shanice, tell them who you are, what you do. Say what's up to everybody.
Hi. So I do use my middle name. My name is Shanice Leanna Harris. Cool. I'm an actor. I'm just like BMW, SLH. I'm an actor. I'm also a teacher. So I strive to perform activism through education. I graduated from Brown University, MFA 2018. I got my master's in acting, and I've just been an actor in New York, teaching and moving around. So yeah, that's a little bit about
me. I love it. I love it. And I actually asked Shanice probably like a month ago to just save this date, because I knew it was going to be for part 20. And I was like, I want her to be a part of like this milestone. And
I've been trying to be on this call forever, man.
Well, you had to wait. Okay, this was the time. I never typically do a real intro because I'm obviously just the moderator. But since I'm a part of this conversation, I'll give brief background. I don't know that I've done it like this ever, but here's who Bryce is. Grew up, born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona. I served my first 18 there. I call it serving because it was some time. You know, I did my time in the desert. Then I went to University of Notre Dame undergrad on a track and field scholarship, got a marketing degree with a minor in theater. Then I went ahead to go get my master's in acting at the University of Connecticut. Been in New York, thriving as an actor, as well as like a fitness, health, wellness professional with SoulCycle now, Precision Run and some other things coming up. Not to mention being a small business owner now with the 4-Year Discomfort LLC, digital media.
There we go.
All the things. So that's, if you didn't know who I was, if I've never done that and you were curious, that's who I am. And I'm ready to actually just get into the conversation. And we actually had some time to speak last night. And Marcus, I would love for you to sort of start things off and talking about what it is to be a Black boss and the representation of Black bosses or lack thereof.
Well, I mean, for me, it's been throughout my career, I've been the only Black man in the room most of the time, whether it was early on, even now, even dealing with banks, investor meetings, that type of stuff. And so it's something that's just kind of always been there, and it's something I've always been aware of, but it's also something I'm realizing and starting to appreciate on a deeper level now, the ability or opportunity, I should say, to hopefully set an example and hopefully help open up some doors for others, whether it be entrepreneurs supporting other Black entrepreneurs and what they're doing. I've been very involved at MIT in their Entrepreneurship Center, advising startups for quite some time. And so really spending a lot of time now thinking about how I can help, bring up a younger group of entrepreneurs in what they're doing. And so it's interesting. One of the things we were talking about is I was talking with our HR director here at Noble, and who was a Black woman. And she'd mentioned to me that I'm the first Black man she's reported to. And it kind of caught me off guard. And then I made a list of all the people I've reported to, worked for in my life. And it was, I think the number was like 17 white men and 2 white women. And it hit me that there's just not, I was surprised by that. And it's something that I'm really starting to pay attention to, because it's probably the case for everybody at Noble who reports to me. I'm trying not to take that for granted and make sure that, I try and do some things to start changing that.
I can definitely say I've never reported to a Black man or a Black woman in like an employee-employer relationship. I think the only times I've had that dynamic has either been a director that I've had where I was fortunate enough to have like a Black man or a Black woman person that's directing me in something artistic, or coaches growing up in as an athlete. I've definitely had Black male and Black female coaches, but as it pertains to like the professional world of just like simply working, and I've never, not once, reported to a Black man or woman. And like, I don't know what that would feel like to be Black reporting to someone that is Black. And I don't know, it's, I think there's such a great opportunity for the people that work for you, you know, both Black and white, to know what that is and to understand what that feels like. Do you feel like there's a responsibility that you hold, or are you just, you know, taking it in stride?
I mean, I think just as a business leader, there's a responsibility to lead and build the best organization that you can and support the team. So that's kind of where the responsibility is, where personally, you know, I want to make sure that we're giving, and it's not just me, the team at Noble, Michael, we all feel the same way about this, is making sure that, you know, when we're hiring, that there's a diverse pool of candidates. Like on the creative side, on design, one of the things we talked about is that there's not enough diversity coming out of schools. And so one of the things we're looking at is how can we then impact that? And that's through, you know, internships, mentorships earlier on with students in high school, to just expose a broader group of people to what's possible. Entrepreneurship is also a really great example.
Absolutely. I love that. I mean, I think that that's a very necessary first step for sure in order to start to see the qualified diversity that we want to see, and not simply diversity for the sake of diversifying, but actually putting qualified people and qualifying those people to be in positions to, you know, add to the diversity of a company in a real way. Shanice, we were talking a bit yesterday, and something that I think everybody on this call shares and can relate to is being Black in predominantly white spaces. I know that when I spoke to Marcus as a part of you growing up, for me growing up, as well as Shanice, you growing up, and I'd love for you to speak to that from your point of view and your perspective.
Right. Well, I didn't say this. I'm actually from Houston, Texas. So growing up in Houston, particularly the area that I'm from, A-Leaf, I was always in Black spaces. So I spent elementary school, middle school, high school, all around Black folks and Black communities, actually diverse communities. So it wasn't just Black people. You had African folks, you had Mexican folks, you had people from Ecuador. You may have had maybe like 5 white people in total, but I went to school with diversity and enriched culture around me, right? So then I go to undergrad in the middle of New Mexico, and I don't see no Black people. And then I go to graduate school at Brown, at like a very prestigious liberal arts Ivy League university. And I find myself being yet again the only Black person in the room, and the problems that it presents. Well, actually the detriment that it presents to Black people being in spaces like that, my experience. It took me a bit to get through it, and to also reckon with the fact that I was the token audition student that made it into the program. Mm-hmm. So then that thing of imposter syndrome comes into place. It's like, am I here because of my talent and because I have something to offer to this industry to make impact, to change, or am I here because they needed to make a quota and they had a scholarship they needed to get rid of? It's laying on habit there, huh? Laying it on
habit. Say it plain.
You know, those spaces are also, I mean, sometimes they work to your advantage because, you know, there is that thing that you have to do of say my name, say it right, loud and proud. I'm in the room, so I'm going to take up space because I have to, because there's no one else here that looks like me that can help me and assist me in my journey. You know, and there's also this thing of, because I graduated in 2018 and I was there 2015-2018. A lot of things happened, you know, being the only Black student in the class, but then also leaving the classroom and then going out into the world where things would happen to you as a Black person, and then you would try to go back and tell your classmates to try to vent or, you know, to seek some kind of refuge, and you couldn't because they didn't understand. So that othering also comes into place too.
Yeah, I feel like I like that it's you and Marcus, because I'm relating to both of you very heavily on either side of the spectrum. Because for me, at where I went, I very much didn't feel like, am I just fulfilling a quota in the beginning? Because I was not truly like a traditional actor in the beginning. This was very new to me. So I wasn't even thinking about, you know, the optics of any of that. I was just happy to like be there, right? I was like, I got a scholarship. This is great. And then I start to meet people from previous classes, and it's like, oh, there's always two Black guys. And oh, there's always two, like, of like, there's this type of Black guy, which I fulfill. And then there's this other type of Black guy, which my friend, Sam, he'll be fine. Sam fulfilled. And then there's like a long line of that, right? So I can like look to the class before me and be like, I was the of this class, and you were the of your, you know what I mean? And so once I started to look at it like that, I was like, wow, okay. And we're, you know, success is happening, but at the same time, I'm like, I'm not sure how to feel about this. And because there's always just the one or the two, or maybe the three, if you're lucky, your educational experience will just be different, because the criteria and everything you're learning is gonna try to help the greater group of people. And so you're often left with like, well, August Wilson exists. Are we going to read him? No, but he's out there. It's like, the okay.
Very Eurocentric.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So I definitely can relate there. And I guess I'm going to keep talking because I'm a part of the panel too. I'm just used to bouncing conversation between people. But I definitely want to talk about this idea of being Black on display. And I think this sort of segue is pretty good, because coming from that idea of being a token to, there are so often times, whether it's an educational institution or a corporate entity that has their like Black person that knows the things that they put in the forefront. Mm-hmm. And so then they sort of let that one person, whether it's a Black person or like an Asian person or a Hispanic person or LGBTQ plus community person, like, you can do that. We're not going to change our culture, but we're going to look like we did because you know everything, and we're just going to back you without really changing how we're feeling on the inside, or without really changing the structure and the culture of the company. And that's something that I admired when I first was speaking with Marcus. It was because when we spoke earlier, you talked about, what was it, like the shoots? You were talking about like some of the shoots you were having and like not realizing or recognizing that there just weren't a whole bunch of like, you know, what were you, remember what
oh,
you
yeah,
said?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that? It's interesting. So in a startup, as an entrepreneur, you've got to just make things happen. You've got to get things done, right? And so this was around... And we just moved very, very quickly. So the first model we had at Noble, his name's Jed, and he's on our marketing team. Amazing, amazing, amazing guy. But he was literally the model on the male and female footwear, because we didn't have anybody else, right? And so it was just like, it's like this ongoing joke. But then it was like, we started to expand the portfolio just through the network of just various people, and started to grow that out. And then one of the things that we started to take a look at, which was, you know, there were some women who reached out who said, you know, when I look at the product pages for women's apparel, I don't see myself. And I was like, let me go look at those pages, because I had not looked at, believe it or not, I don't look at the Noble website very often. And so then we went there and looked at it, and I was like, okay, she's right. And so then talked with the marketing team, and we looked at the our models. And then as we started to dig deeper, it was like all of our product comes in at one point. So we reach out to see who's available, and we shoot all the product on the people who are available. And then if there's not diversity in that, then all of a sudden the product pages don't have any diversity. So we, by being aware of it, we made changes on what we're doing with that. But it's something that as an entrepreneur, what you got to do to get things going is very different than when you take a moment to step back and say, okay, let's look at how things are being presented to the world. And so little things like that, and I've taken it for granted, quite frankly, just because I helped start the company from a diversity perspective. And now I'm at a point where it's just like, you know, we're far enough along to really take a deep look at these things and start to impact change and make sure that we're doing things the way that we want to. And that's one of the things that I talked with you both about last night, with being into stoicism and the Marcus Aurelius quote about, you know, stop arguing what a great man is and be one. And we apply that to start, you know, stop arguing about what a great company is and be one. And you can apply that to so many different things. And so that's kind of the way that we think about these things and trying to hold ourselves, you know, as a brand to a higher standard, but how I approach it as a person and trying to hold myself to a higher standard.
Yeah, I think something that I really admired when I first talked to you was you telling me that, giving me that bit of background and feeling comfortable enough to talk about that. Because a lot of what I've been not up against, but when I'm talking to CEOs and VPs of companies that are like, help me be better, they sort of just want me to do it. You know what I mean? They sort of just want me to come in, be the face of this change. And they're like, I'll pay you X amount. You do this and I'll be over here, essentially, because I want to be right for my company. Like, I want my company to be right. It's not like I want to be right. It's like, I want my company to be right. And so when you told me that, that made me even more comfortable in the conversation and really considering you to be, you know, talk in the conversation. It's because it could have been easy for Noble to say, look, Marcus is black, so, you know, we're doing all the things.
It's fine. We don't need anymore.
Yeah. Right. You know, it's crazy because it's too important to mess up, right? And so there's not like, if you've got to give an internal report to your company about your diversity initiatives, then you're not doing it, right? Like, we don't need to give an update to the marketing team about what's going on if they're living it and breathing it. We don't need to talk about it internally if everybody's living it and breathing it. And, you know, for us anyway, we don't want to put together kind of a checklist of here are the things that we're doing, because you see a lot of this stuff going on right now. And when you look at the statistics of some of the large companies that are doing these things and how diverse they are, in totality, it is very different when you start to look at who is the leadership in that company. Who are the board members in that company? Because I guarantee you it's very, very different. And so it's one of those things around really kind of appreciating that and also just wanting to live it and make a difference there. And then also, you know, part of the thing is that, and we talked about this too, about people getting uncomfortable and wanting to do things because they're uncomfortable, they want the company to address things. And there have been times where it's just like, no, we are gonna take the time and make sure that we're doing the right thing. And if you're uncomfortable, you know, you can sit in that for a little bit, because it's like everything, that's how you get stronger. Like in fitness and training, like you work out, you push yourself to a point and then you get stronger. And so I think that right now there's a lot of discomfort out there, and I think it's healthy. I really, really do.
Yeah.
Because it's something that if you pay attention to it, it's an opportunity to learn and understand. And then when you get through it, it's an opportunity to grow.
Ultimately, like at the end of the day, and Shanice, I kind of want to bring it back to you in the same vein, and the idea of how important discomfort is in your growth as an actor, actress, and you're auditioning or prepping with someone or trying to figure out how you're going to say the thing or how you're going to do the thing. There is a level of discomfort as an artist or a creative that comes into play when you're showing somebody something, but we're never going to grow. I just want you to talk. I don't want to say it all, but I want you to speak to that idea before we move past the importance of discomfort in order to grow.
I think if anything, especially during this time of like stillness and being quiet while the world is has been shut down, is trying to figure out how to get back on its feet, you know. Y'all, we've been we have not been comfortable. We have been thriving or living in like a time of discomfort, right? And so when I think back on like hitting the pavement, I can't believe I just said that, but like hitting the pavement to like go to auditions or like prepare work, you know, there's just like this overwhelming presence sometimes that I get of, I think, feeling inadequate or feeling like I have to present a certain type of chemise to fit the mold, which causes like discomfort, right? And so during this time of stillness, I've really been trying to focus on, so what can I do to just like bring myself to every situation that I'm in? Like, what can I do to bring myself to the conversations that I'm having or that I will have with my future students that I teach or that the students that I was teaching before the pandemic happened? You know what I mean? Like, what am I doing to make sure that I bring myself into rooms with my friends, into the room with my family members, into rooms with people that I'm trying to find a way to like be in a room with? I'm saying this very gently, but you know, I'm actually driving in a time of discomfort towards some white folks right now, which is okay.
I would imagine, Shanice, in acting, and Bryce, it is like my best friend is an actor, and what I've heard from him is the amount of rejection. And it's not like, it's one thing like if Noble launches a product and people, you know, didn't like it, you know, that's not them saying no, Marcus. It's just, you know, whereas like if you're in acting and you go in for an audition and you don't get the audition. And so that's got to be a really interesting thing to learn how to deal with. And then it can get much more complicated depending upon the situations. But I got to imagine that's pretty hard.
Yeah, it can be really hard. I think what we hear, we usually hear more no's than we do hear yeses, right? And so I think the hardest thing in that is not taking it personal, because like casting directors, they have to find certain types of people, right? To fit the part that the writer has written. And then production has to say yes to it. And then the show gets rolling. And same thing like theater and television and film, right? So yeah, it can get a little sad sometimes.
I wanna, because we're about to just do a whole, because I wanna deep dive into that whole thing, but I also want to keep us on track, because we can do it. We can go there and stay.
Okay,
there.
We'll get back to your point.
But no, something. So after our conversation yesterday, I actually ended up hopping on this last minute like social justice, like equality, inclusion call with student athletes, and I was called in by like a friend of mine when I was an athlete at Notre Dame. And something that we were stressing to all of these student athletes was authenticity. And that was something you were starting to really hit on when you were saying like, how can I bring Shanice, you know, the real Shanice into all of these moments? And I think that if companies like a Noble are creating a culture where it's safe to just be yourself and bring things up, mm-hmm. and then know that it could be a no, not right now, but feel comfortable in that, then I think people being okay sitting in their discomfort will, I guess, expand, will grow, that idea will be okay. Like being in a company where feedback is, it's fine to be told no. And it's not like this direct punch, like gut punch to the soul, like they don't like me anymore. And it's more about, you know, and it's more about, no, we just want to do this the right way. We want to be this, not attempt to be this, coming back to the quote from earlier. But I want to highlight that idea of authenticity. Because it's serious. It's serious, because the minute you put on a face of, like, if I was putting on a face during 4-year discomfort, and then I was presented with these CBS News Live opportunities, and then was like, oh, you know, now I'm about to be, you know, on national television, pretending, like, no, like it, that would be a very uncomfortable place to be. Right? If I wasn't just coming in authentically myself and very passionate about the things I was passionate about, then I would low-key get exposed, right? Then it would be like, oh, he's not with the cause, you know, like, and then the haters would come. But I think it's important to be authentic. And so I wanted to highlight that. And Marcus, we spoke to it like a bit, but I want you to dive a bit deeper into diversity and design, because I don't know that the world and people listening.
Yeah.
I don't know that people know that there's a lack of diversity in design specifically.
Yeah, so definitely do that. But just to touch back on the other piece is one of the things that when I've kind of thought back to how far I've pushed things in other organizations that I've been a part of. And it's always been to a point where somebody I work for starts to get too uncomfortable, right? So it was like, that's in the organization, kind of as far as it could go. And that exists now. The big difference now is that I don't report to anyone. Mm-hmm. And so I can also impact change. And so I've led a couple of panels like with CEOs and like heads of HR talking about this exact issue. And it was very interesting because it is even like the heads of HR who are trying to do something, if they're not supported, you know, by the CEO, or if the CEO wants to do something and he or she is not supported by the board, it creates an environment that is not where people don't feel comfortable and don't feel like they can kind of really be themselves or push kind of the envelope. So that's just something that's really important that I see right now, back to the issue around companies getting more diverse, but not diverse at senior levels or at the board levels. Those are the types of things that it can impact the overall kind of culture of the company. But on the design front, it's one of the things that Michael, my business partner, has a master's in industrial design and is the most creative person I've ever worked for or worked with. And he, you know, we were talking about like, just as we're getting applicants on the design side, and we're just like really wanting to make sure that we've got a diverse pool of applicants. And so we're just not seeing that. So now we're looking at ways that we can start to improve that longer term, as well as doing more outreach now, because as a startup, it's just like, it starts with just, you know, who knows you, right? And if you're a company that no one's heard of and you have a job listing, it's very different than if you're a brand that someone has been talking about or wearing for a while. And so it's you know, those are the things that we're looking at right now and how to impact these things. So a perfect example is that we're doing this collaboration with a nonprofit here in Boston called Artists for Humanity, which is, I believe, the largest employer of high school kids in the city of Boston. And it's really phenomenal what they're doing is they're hiring the kids to work as artists, photographers, videographers. There's mentors within the program. And then they have deliverables, just like anybody Wow. you would kind of contract with. Mm-hmm. And so we're talking with them about, one, we're helping to give the kids in the program exposure to footwear and apparel design. We've got, they've designed some products with our designers that we're working on. We're going to create content around it with our content team. And it's hopefully opening up their eyes to the possibilities that exist within the footwear and apparel industry. And yeah. many of the graduates from that program do go on to creative positions in or creative schools or creative positions afterwards. And so there's opportunities, you know, for them, hopefully within the industry as well.
Yeah, I think something that you really hit on is this idea of exposure. Exposure to this being a viable option as a job, or even past the job, as a passion. I mean, I feel like we love shoes. I'll speak for myself growing up in a predominantly Black neighborhood.
Yeah.
Shoes are important. I'm on the block in Harlem, like, shoes are important. We love footwear, but I don't always know that we see ourselves represented as the people designing that footwear, unless you're a celebrity or unless you're, you know, a sponsored yeah. athlete. And so, like, there's a lot that goes into it. My friend Jess Christian, who I went to school with, who has her own footwear company, like, she expressed the same thing when she was on the conversation. It was like, she didn't have anyone to look to in this arena, like, as she is starting up, and she had to, like, develop, she, like, created, like, a new thing. It's called, I don't want to mess it up, but it's dope. I don't want to mess it up. I don't want to, like, say it wrong, and then she'd be like, why did you mismarket yeah. my entire yeah. product?
Right.
But she, like, invented something new for athletes and footwear. And like, it took like 3 years. She had no idea, but she also didn't have anybody to look up to that looked like her, you know, in that arena. And she expressed, you know, the hardships of being the only Black woman in it's just a white, you know, male dominated field, whether it's going to the manufacturing, whether it's working with the engineers, like she just was not seeing herself. And so I think what she really spoke to was this idea of exposure and letting kids know that this is definitely a viable passion, not just job, but like something you can be passionate about that can be lucrative down the line. And along the lines of exposure, something that's also important for Black kids is empowerment. And I'd love for Shanice, for you to sort of speak to the importance of that and how you like to do that.
Right. I think something that we were talking about last night, I said that there's that when I teach my kids acting, that it's not about them attaining celebrity. It's about first instilling confidence to the child. And so a lot of times I find myself going to these classrooms, and these kids are like all over the place. And they're like, ah, I just want to act. I just want to perform. Oh, we're going to do all these things. And I'm like, yeah, we can get there. But like, let's first like focus on you being able to walk into a space and like take pride in yourself and just say your name. And that's usually one of the exercises that I lead off with when I'm working with my children. And I don't know, maybe it's social media. I don't know, maybe that's what's killing it. But you know, there's like this veil of like, I'm gonna cover or conceal myself because I'm like in this space with other people and I don't necessarily know how to be myself. I know how to act and be like other things that I see on TV, that I see in movies, that I see on my Instagram, that I see on TikTok and all the other little things. But like this, this confidence of just walking into the room and being your young, innocent self and having the confidence to like look somebody in the eyes and like say your name and introduce yourself. I'm noticing that a lot in our children, especially our Black and brown children, because that's who I teach, there is like a huge inability to do that. And so when I do get the privilege of being able to teach these babies, I'm like, all right, we're gonna use some theater, right? We're gonna do some of these scenes by these Black artists, but I want us to focus on, you know, being able to walk into a space and just relax and have like a small sense of what your 10-year-old self could be or is, or what your 12-year-old self is, or even your 18-year-old self as you're about to move and progress through the world. Like, it's so important. And this kind of goes back to what we were talking about finding comfort in discomfort, but it's so important, I really think, in this day and age, in this time, to just be one with yourself, no matter like if you're a child or if you're an adult. But like, this world is crazy and it will try to pull you in different places, different things to be. And I've definitely had a really great time with approaching my educational work holistically.
And that's really big. And something that you brought up for me is thinking about, we had Jade on last week and she was speaking from a Black mother's perspective of like a Black son, you know, reads Black, is Black. And the challenge that she finds herself in and sort of the trauma that she experiences as like a mother of a Black son, of like empowering him and lifting him up and telling him he can be everything and anything that he wants to be, but also telling him the rules of the world for him once he leaves the home. And so when you were talking about, you know, like the celebrity and they like all of these cool things, but then it's hard for them to just like look you in the eye and be confident in who they're being. It's because I would say, this is just my opinion, I would say it's because they're receiving like conflicting messages. It's like, yes, I can be confident if I am on a platform. I can be confident if I am or do have some form of celebrity or clout. That's when I can be confident. But there's no way like little Black or brown me can just be confident in who I am, like day to day. And I didn't know I was going to ask, but Marcus, how have you found that, I guess, as a father? I just want to sort of throw that to you, if you wouldn't mind answering that from the perspective of a father.
So one thing on what Shanice is saying is, I think that one of the most important skills in business is how you present yourself.
Right.
When I think about people who have been successful that I've worked with or I've seen or I've observed, the ability to give a presentation confidently, to in a meeting speak up and articulate your point, being comfortable in a room introducing yourself when you're the most junior person. These are things that are, I feel like, really make a tremendous difference. And so kids learning that in an acting, like as an, you know, a part of acting, I think is awesome for them to learn that skill, because it's really, really important.
Sure.
And so with my wife and I, with our daughters, are very kind of focused about how they present themselves. And we have them, sometimes with some of the schoolwork, get in front of us and talk about it. They love looking at things that I'm on. Mm-hmm. And picking it apart. And they're at this age where one of the funniest things I've seen, and I was actually really impressed with how they did it. I was on a podcast a while back, and somehow they found the YouTube video, downloaded it before we got on a flight. And by the time we got off the flight, they cut every section where I said, or and put it into a whole thing. And so now they laugh about it all the time. So, but we talk about this and how it's important to speak clearly and articulate your points. So
absolutely. I think I'd be lying if I didn't praise the importance of how you present yourself. I think going to, getting trained as an actor, there was definitely a big section on that. Of walking into the room and saying your name confidently, but not cocky, and like being confident in yourself, but not too, like, I remember we had to find the balance of, like, they're like, walk into the room, breathe, so right. that we see that you're comfortable, because if you're holding your breath, automatically you're nervous, now everybody else is nervous and tense for you, so that's mm-hmm. not going to put anybody at ease if you have tension or if you're holding your breath. So they're like, be breathing, don't bug your eyes out, like, it's going to be fine. And this is just a lesson, like, this has nothing to do with conversation. This is just a lesson for anybody listening. When you say your full name and you introduce yourself, do not end with like an up pitch, end down, because you never want to question who you are. So instead of coming into the room and being like, hi, my name is Bryce Michael Wood. No, it's like, hi, I'm Bryce Michael Wood, Bryce Michael Wood. But those are simple things to teach. But anyway, off topic again.
Super subtle, but very powerful, though.
No, it's super, very powerful. But then also, too, to add on to that, though, because I'm going to do that. Yeah. I'm going to do this. Not letting other people in the room who are teaching you tell you how to be yourself and how to say your name.
Mm.
Because that was something I struggled against a lot while being the only Black person, female woman in class. I'm not going to say my name in a very presentational way that gets rid of any kind of Southerness that's inside of me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say my name exactly how it is.
I think that's a really important point. So going back to what I was saying about presenting
right.
and confidence with that, the more authentic it is, mm-hmm. the more powerful it is. And so it's not just getting up there and saying it in a very clear and confident way. It's like being yourself and being vulnerable and open and a human, right? It's one of the things that when I think about like what's happening in the world now with COVID and everything changing to virtual, right? Like all these Zoom meetings. One thing that is like, that I've really liked to see happen is being on a Zoom and someone's child walks in to ask them a question, or someone's dog starts barking, because it introduces this humanity to relationships, business relationships that didn't necessarily exist before. And so it's something that I just embraced and absolutely feel like is a great glimpse into people's like worlds,
which is why this platform has been as, I guess, successful, if you want to call it, or as impactful as it's been, because we're seeing experience in real life from Black faces that we wouldn't have otherwise seen, because we as Black people are taught to present a certain way in a professional setting. And so then we don't necessarily like help people understand that there are levels to this and that there are all types of different Black people out there if we continue to be inauthentic to who we are, if we continue to put on a new face and like say my name differently and articulate in a certain way to make sure that everybody else in the room is comfortable with my certain level of Blackness, which like, that's what I was hearing when you were talking, Shanice, because myself too, we had like a voice dialect class and they were like, all right, this is how you're talking and this is how you need to talk. And at the time, I didn't realize what they were essentially trying to erase. But if I were to look at it now, it's like, oh, when I talk like this,
yeah.
You were trying to get rid of that thing that will like distinguish me as this type of like Black person. You want me to be just like an all-around just guy that isn't Black or white or anything. You just want me to be like this.
Better yet, yeah. I had a teacher tell me that I've been saying my name wrong for the past 20-something years.
What?
White teacher as well. Yeah, man, that conversation is this for another time. But like I said before, just wrapping everything back together, it's very important for us to be confident in ourselves in every area, professional, yeah, corporate, and acting, all aspects of life.
And I would cut for all the white people listening now and that will listen, I would caution you to like check in with yourself when you're ready to correct somebody on something that they're doing, like a Black person or a person of color. Like check in with you to see like what that is and understand like what about, I don't know, Shanice saying her name the way she said it made you uncomfortable, or what about that then painted a picture of who she's supposed to be now based on how she's talking or how she's carrying herself. I think that's a very good homework, or very, it's just like something good to do. Like have you guys heard the WAIT acronym, the Why Am I Talking? Like, yeah. Literally it's called WAIT, but then it's like WAIT, Why Am I Talking? And I try to apply that more times than often now, because, and it has saved me. It has gotten me through a lot of situations because I want to say something immediately and then I have to wait and go, okay, why am I about to talk right now? What am I about to say? Is this important or is this just about me right now? But so a topic I wanted to make sure I covered was educating influencers. And just influencers, like the fact that is a word now is a sign of the times, right? There are influencers, like social media, like it's no longer just celebrities. It's no longer just like quote unquote famous people. Like there are influencers that have a following, and there's a danger with some influencers sort of just blindly promoting and blindly posting things that they're told is like for the cause, or that they're told like this is what Black Lives Matter is about. And then if they don't have all the facts and then somebody comes for them, now they're not necessarily representing a movement, or they're not necessarily representing a cause in the best way, but there are like thousands upon thousands of eyes on that. And so if you're an influencer listening eventually, whenever you do listen to this, I really stress education. I really stress research. I had to do a lot and continue to have to do a lot of research now because people keep asking me more and more questions because they feel I'm qualified to answer them. And so rather than sort of just flying by the seat of my pants and just making it up as I go, I actually have to take the time and read the material and watch the documentaries and read the articles and know the facts before I then just go ahead and like post something to For Your Discomfort's Instagram page or repost something to my story, or like the days of that are done for me because I never want to mislead or misdirect people based on the influence that I've now gained. And so I just want to make that's something that's very important for me to say on today's conversation, part 20. Because that's
one thing, Bryce. Yeah, one thing that also I really like when you started off is like, these are our opinions. I have my experience, right, which is going to be very different than your experience, which is going to be very, like, very different from everyone's experience. And I'm an expert on my experience, and that's it.
Yes.
And yeah. I can, and I am also, you know, educating myself and learning and digging in. But I try to speak to my experiences and the effects they have on me, because that's what I know and what I've lived. And then I have conversations about other things, but when I'm trying to speak about it, it's speaking from my own place of experience.
Mm-hmm. And right there, that was good. Shanice, what you about to say? I want to actually hear what you're about to say.
Thank you. No, but just kind of going back to what you were saying about being an influencer and the steps that you're taking to make sure that the information that you're posting is like meaningful, that whatever you're saying is factual according to, you know, whatever news broadcast or outlet that you're getting it from. And I'm saying this not to be negative, but I'm saying this because I'm always concerned with our younger generation. And I'm finding that not a lot of folks know how to think for themselves anymore. Mm. Because it is so easy to get access to information, right? There is so much information on this thing right here. It's literally in your hand. You can go online and like find stuff. But something that I've seen happen with like influencers is that someone can post something and it's fact. And it's like, well, wait a minute though. We don't know necessarily if that is fact yet. That could be someone else's opinion. Why don't you do the research for yourself and then develop your own opinions so that you are able to think for yourselves, you know? I'm not saying that in a negative way. I just really appreciate that you are an influencer that is taking the time and going through those steps before you post or say something. You know what I mean?
Nice. Just kudos to you. Yeah, appreciate you. I think it's... what I talked about in the very beginning, first episode, is I was tired of the people fulfilling quotas, bumper sticker hashtags, like just reposting for the sake of reposting and not really having a lot of action and a lot of motivation behind what they're doing. And in the conversation I found myself in last night with these student athletes, is someone said something very, very potent. And then I sort of twisted it for my own metaphor, but it's like, don't step up to the plate unless you're ready to swing. So don't post about Black Lives Matter and all these different causes unless you're ready to actually put your money where your mouth is, or in this instance your comfort where your mouth is. Like, unless you're ready to go there, then it's okay to not post, because you may not be helping, like at the end of the day when someone does follow up and you don't really have much else to say or much else to do, and so it could be misleading. And so I say what I say to just caution people that do have an influence to simply research. Like, that's it. Like, it's not about not speaking, it's not about not doing your part, but it's about, if you're going to do it, are you willing to bet everything on it, essentially? Like is your brand more important than the cause, or like, is your well-being or like your source of income more important? If it is, then that is fair. No one can come for you. No one can be like, you're selfish because you care about like living well. No. But again, it's that idea of like, don't step up to the plate unless you're ready to swing. When you're ready, and for whatever reason, I happened to be ready like 2.5 months ago to like do it all. I didn't care anymore. You know, I'm tired. I was tired of the loss of Black life. I was tired of how I've been treated. I'm tired of how my friends and family have been treated. And so like, I'm done. I'm sold out for this thing. Not everybody's there. Not everybody has to be there, but it's just about recognizing where you are and understanding what your participation in something important can mean if you're not well informed. And so that's just really the heart behind me wanting to say, like, if you're an influencer, supporting all the things, educate yourself so that you're not put on the spot one day and you could potentially set some things back or look bad for yourself and actually do more harm to your brand than you were trying to do good by posting a thing that was in support of like a dope cause. So that's just, you know, advice, Black, white, whatever you are, just, you know, if you're not ready, like, don't step up if you're not ready to swing. Like, it's okay to just be in the bullpen and like chill out, you know, until you're ready, until you've been practicing your swing, practicing. And finally, you know what, like when that fastball comes, I'm going.
You know, I like that analogy. And I also like the part about practice, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are plenty of ways to get practice in these conversations before you've got to start putting it out there in a big way if you're unprepared, right? So it's just like understanding perspectives before you step to the plate.
Right. Like and I'll speak from my own experience, like the first CVS situation, I didn't feel I was uncomfortable. I was like, nope. You know, like, what am I going to say? And they're like, we love what you've been saying. Just do that. And I was like, you know, like, I'm more so just like a host moderator. Like, I know how to move conversations, but I'm not necessarily the guy with like the book and like know all of the things. And so, you know what I mean? And I made it very clear to them, like, this is just my opinion and my perspective. I hope that, you know, you don't think I'm telling people to now go do. These are just my thoughts and my feelings. And to speak to what Shanice was talking about earlier, feeling comfortable and being authentic in that helped. Feeling comfortable just being like, look, this is me. This is what I'm saying. It's not, you know, don't take it as like gospel or anything. This is just how I feel. If it's useful, great. If it's not, also fine. But this is what I'm supposed to say right now, and I'm saying it. And before we get out of here, because we got about 5 minutes. Look, it flew by. I told y'all. Something that you started to hint at, Shanice, that I want you to actually unpack just a bit, is the title that I have written in the runner show that you can say, unless you don't want to say it.
I don't know what it is.
Reaccepting white people.
Reaccepting white people. I think since it's actually been a very I'm gonna tread like choppy water here. But since the beginning of the pandemic, when we started seeing these Black lives be murdered, there was this overwhelming feeling, and I know that other Black people share this, we're not speaking for all Black people, but other people, other Black folks feeling sad and overwhelmed, and a lot of white people that that I love or trusted, you know, I went to school with, we didn't necessarily communicate for a while. And so I found myself being in this situation of trying to figure out or trying to negotiate how I can be in conversation with these, with the people that I love, but also understanding that we're all coming from different places when we're approaching the conversation of racism or race in America, or we're talking about the lack of diversity within institution, or we're talking about microaggressions, or we're talking about all these things that can sometimes, and in my experience, mostly impede upon relationships with friends that don't look like me. And so I have found myself in this position of trying to reacclimate myself to putting aside my hurts, right? My experiences with teachers that are white, friends that I love that are white, and understanding that we all need each other at the end of the day to continue this conversation of how we can meet each other and how we can heal and how we can mend. And so that's something that I've also been in. That's been my discomfort for real, y'all. That's been my discomfort for real, for real. Just to keep it 100, just to keep it candid. Like, that's been my discomfort.
The one thing for me with all of that is I've got a slightly different approach, but it is there are some people that are open and their heart is in the right place. And I'm very fortunate to have a lot of those people around me. But then there are also people who just see things very differently. And it's like, it's not even worth the time to step to the plate because it's like not going to change their opinions. Right. And I've had some of these conversations, and what I've decided kind of over the last several months is I only have so many hours in the day and I'm going to spend my time productively and just, you know, saying no in some of these situations and recognizing when I'm in a conversation that is not going to go anywhere, and then just not spend time on that anymore.
Right. And I think the most frustrating thing that has been for me in this reckoning that I'm up against is knowing that I am around folks that are like that, that are loving, that are caring, but also them not being where I need them to be in this conversation. and me being like, come on, let's go, let's go, let's go, because I know that you have it in you, because I know that you have the heart towards having that conversation. But for me, it's been the pulling, and I'm just not pulling anymore, you know, that acceptance. Yeah. I'm not pulling, like, pull yourself up, get to the conversation, rise to it. I can't do the work for you anymore. I'm not going to.
Yeah, and that's, I think that's something that has been echoed throughout all 20 parts of this, is this idea that while I'm happy to do it, it's simply not my job to educate, but I'm open to it because I love you. You know what I mean? Right. Like, at the end of the day, like, I'm open to having these conversations with people because I care about you. And for me, I have a big care. So it's like, not just people I know, but like, I want, literally, I'm like, why? I scream white people like every week, because I'm like, come on, like, I care. Like, I want the change. I want you to be passionate about just human life in general. And this holdup or this hiccup on the skin color, it's annoying, because I want you to be in a place that you're not yet, which is, again, take your time. I don't need anybody to be perfect, as long as you're present with yourself and where you're at, and can be honest with yourself and where you're at, and can hold yourself accountable in that place. But at the same time, it's like, come on. Sometimes that's how I feel, like, just talking to someone and I feel like I'm getting somewhere with them, and I'm like, great, he or she gets it, there we go. And then there's like one thing and I'm like, gosh, okay. And then I get my Marcus on and I'm like, all right, well, I don't have time. Like, literally, I just kind of just shut it down. I'm like, we were doing so well. But there are only so many hours in the day, as Marcus said. Like, I can only spend time, this a certain amount of time on this before I'm no longer focused on the people that really need me there, need my time and my attention and my work, because I'm trying to pull you up. I guess the last thing before we get out of here is, you know, white allies, white accomplices, and not just white accomplices, just all allies, all accomplices as it pertains to Black lives. Specifically, don't stop. It's far from over. And something that's going to be really, really important is voting. Never going to sit up here and tell you who to vote for. I just want you to be informed when you're voting, and understand the importance of the vote coming up this election, and the potential impact it will have, not can have, but it will have on a lot of lives in this country, depending on the way this thing goes. And so, as much as you're posting and as much as you're educating yourself and as much as you're now pouring into Black-owned businesses and, you know, like, giving Black people opportunities in places that they hadn't had them before, let's also be cognizant of our responsibility, I guess, if we have the ability to vote, to vote and to be informed while voting, and understand, again, just education. This is such, and we have time because we're sitting down and we can't really go outside as much as we'd like to. So, like, the excuse is simply just like, I didn't feel like it. And it's a fair excuse. Like, I'm not going to be like, look, if you don't feel like it, don't do it. But then just check in with, like, why you don't feel like it. Why is this not important to you? Why is social justice not that big a deal to you? Is that coming from a place of privilege, or are you just tired? I don't know. But, like, you know, for me, I think you can just be tired. That's totally fine. Burnout is a real thing. And it's okay to acknowledge that and sit down and rest. Again, this is not about being perfect. I'm not perfect. Marcus isn't perfect. Shanice isn't perfect in this, but everyone's doing their part and fully present with how they're doing it. And that's why I had them on at the same time and wanted to sort of get their perspectives at the same time and their experiences. Before we officially hop off, a couple of announcements. Part 20. Just went down for your discomfort part 20. This is an exciting milestone for myself and the team. Yes, I said team. There's a whole FYD team.
We call ourselves FYD
because for your discomfort takes too long. But yeah, the FYD team is killing it. Shouts out to them for helping these last probably 15 episodes or so. Always need a team. Never be afraid to ask for help. You cannot do it all on your own, regardless of the color of your skin. Like, just ask for help. If people are qualified and willing to help, let them, because it can lead to some beautiful things. Partnerships are being locked in, and I now have official, like, space to film it. And we've actually locked in some filming dates, which is exciting. And I have like, you know, directors and cinematographers and like, there's like a whole squad. And so we're definitely, after this episode, we're gonna lay low for about a month or two as we film and like actually plan and like actually have real content in place, because work is starting to come back for me. And so my time just got really crazy. And what I don't want to do is like piecemeal together this important conversation and piecemeal together this platform and start to see it go in a direction that is sort of like, just again, just like sort of running with it. I don't want that. I want it to be, you know, everything that it's been and everything that it can be. So after episode 20, there will still be podcasts every Monday. It's just the live Zoom calls every Friday. Those are going to go away as we actually film real content. I'm excited because while I love Zoom quality, I really want something better. So I can't wait to move in that space. We will see Marcus and Shanice again. I just kind of spoke for them because you guys are going to be a part of it when we get into the studio and actually film something real. So I wanted to let everybody listening know.
Yeah.
Last Zoom call. This was the one.
All right.
Part 20. Shouts out to Marcus and Shanice for being a part of this, the last part of this part of For Your Discomfort in this beginning stage of this baby.
Yeah, well, thanks for including me. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thank you guys so much. I appreciate your perspectives and experiences and everything you had to say. And white people, keep stepping into the room. Podcasts will still be coming out every Monday with more focused topics. And then be on the lookout for like the first like taped, edited film, sound quality, lights. For Your Discomfort panel discussion is coming your way soon. For more updates, head to our website, foryourdiscomfort.com, or go to @foryourdiscomfort on Instagram. And I think that's all of the things that I needed to say so that people know and don't feel blindsided when there's no conversation next Friday. It's not. There'll be a podcast following Monday, but no Zoom. Not happening.
All right.
Thank you guys. Have a great day. Thanks, Marcus. Thank you, Shanice. And everybody else, have a great Friday.
All right. Take care.
Bye, everyone. Take care.
Thanks for stepping into the room. That was a lot, but it was also pretty great. You got this. Remember, it's not about being perfect. It's about being present. Keep leaning in. Keep listening. Keep learning. And I'll see y'all next time.